people cannot imagine going to a 9-to-5 job. People can't imagine going to, I can't travel. Have my young kid at home, or have an elderly person to take care at home. I can't travel. I can't be away for 8-9 hours at a stretch, right? So all these, the regular office and the regular way of thinking about work is so constraining, right? For many people, right? That sometimes we don't realize that, right? And being a part of GoFoodus and working with all these customers kind of made me realize that this remote, giving space on demand is so much more liberating for people, right? It's not just about a space to go and work. It's about reimagining their own professional careers in ways that they've never been able to do before.
Hello everyone, Ashok here. Thank you for tuning in to this 31st episode of Indian Startup Stories, a podcast striving to bring out experiences and insights from entrepreneurs across India. Today, our guest is Shyam Sundar Nagarajan, founder and CEO of GoFloaters, a company that believes that the future of office is anywhere and everywhere. GoFloaters solves the problem of setting office space for startups, freelancers, or independent consultants and more. In this episode, Shyam shares his background, long stint in the IT industry, how he turned the problem into an opportunity to kickstart his entrepreneurial journey, enabling startups and freelancers and changing the perspective of office space in a completely different way, and much more valuable information for you to take away. So without further ado, let's jump in. Hi Shyam, thank you for coming on Indian Startup Stories today. Welcome.
Hey Ashok, thanks for having me, and I'm super excited to do this one with you.
Wonderful, pleasure is mine. Please share about your background and academics and your initial career days, Shyam.
So I'm an old wine in a new bottle when it comes to being entrepreneur, right? So I became an entrepreneur in 2017 after roughly around working in the IT industry for almost 18 years, right? Split between Infosys and Cognizant. So after climbing through the ropes or climbing through the ladder of a corporate world and kind of reaching to the top wherever I wanted to be, right? Then like they say, right, you reach the top and then you're lonely there. So I felt lonely. I felt a little bit, uncomfortable in that position. I said, hey, I'm going to put myself into something more uncomfortable than I've ever been. And that kind of made me become an entrepreneur. My educational, I'm a Chennai born. I'm a Tamilian. I love the sambar vadas and love the dosas, like any and filter coffee before I forget, like any South Indian would. And I studied my schooling was all in Chennai. Then I did my bachelor's from IIT Varanasi. Then I joined Infosys, worked for 4 years there. Then I took a break, did my master's in software systems from BITS Pilani. Then I joined back Cognizant and roughly worked for Cognizant for 14 years. And then, like I said, in 2017, decided to jump into the entrepreneurial stream of work.
Okay.
And in 2014, one of the life-changing moments was that I got selected as a Fulbright scholar. So I was one of the 12 Indians who were in Carnegie Mellon University for a rough period of 4 months, where we were kind of put into a batch of entrepreneurs plus business people plus leaders from all over the world. There were around 26 people, of which 12 from India. And we were kind of taken through management/innovation and entrepreneurship as the focus area by some of the top thinkers of the world, right? Management gurus of the world. So that 4 month period, I would say, was a game changing experience for me, and probably accelerated my entrepreneurial jump, I would say.
Okay, that's fantastic. Pretty nice background on both the educational side and also your professional. Please share about information on what is GoFloaters, what do you do, what is it about?
Yeah, I'll do that. First up, I'll tell you what GoFloaters is not, because that's a question. It's better to kind of say, "Hey, I'm before I say who I am." I feel that it's better to say who we are not. So, GoFloaters is not a co-working provider like a WeWork or a Cowork or 91 Springboard. So we are not that, right? Neither are we an aggregator of co-working places like some of the other people there, which I don't want to take names, right? So having said that, who we are is like GoFloaters is the office for distributed and remote teams. So we help teams to work from anywhere, employees or team members to kind of be productive wherever they are, whenever they are. And we do this by through technology, right? So we've created a curated marketplace of work and meeting spaces that spans across 21 cities in India today, and with over 2,100 spaces to offer. And these are spaces that people, employees of companies of any size, right? It could be like a two-member company to a 500-member company, right? So employees of companies can actually leverage to, one, and specifically in the post-COVID world, break the monotony of work from home, right? Break the loneliness challenges they have while having prolonged work from home stints. Find their focus time, right? Spend like quality 4 to 5 hours of in working and getting things across, rather than kind of battling to manage time between work and home and all of that. And and last but not the least, humans are social beings, right? And being out of office and not meeting your colleagues is, whether we agree it or not, is actually making a dent in company cultures, and it is making a dent in how we as individuals kind of work as a team, right? And we help solve all those challenges for companies, right? That's what we do today. We've been in existence for the last 3.5 years. Obviously, 3.5 years back, nobody thought about remote working and work from anywhere in a big way. But me and my co-founder had an irrational thought that the world is going to become remote, whether you like it or not. Remote world is moving towards remote at a steady pace, right? And we said in 10 years from now, there'll be a lot more remote workers than they were like 3 years back. But thanks to COVID, a lot of things have been gotten accelerated right? So that's basically who we are. And and we already work with like hundreds of companies, small companies. We pride ourselves in working with a lot of early stage startups and bootstrap startups where, one, obviously we provide them with the office infrastructure on demand when they need it, where they need it. At the same time, we're able to free themselves from paying hefty security deposits and obnoxious rents to office space providers in getting their office, right? So so we're happy to be in the game of helping startups finding their feet and growing with a flexi office space model that we offer.
Okay, that's pretty good start. You bringing up the co-working space style, but actually mixing up with the Airbnb concept. It's a good one with social aspects as well. Nice. And COVID has, of course, must have been a boosting for your business, because now everyone is looking for a remote.
Absolutely. I'll be beaten up to say this, but at least for the business, COVID has been a godsend. From all personal angles, obviously, it's been a terrorizing time for all of us. But at least from an adoption of remote and for people to even think beyond a brick and mortar structure, I think it's been an eye opener for many business owners and HR people that they can think what can happen outside of your headquarters is something that people were finding it hard to realize before.
True. So how did it all begin? The idea of Go Floaters, where did it start?
So first and foremost, GoFloaters is not the startup that I began the moment I became an entrepreneur. I was actually solving some of the problem. I was actually solving the problem of insurability and ease of buying insurance for companies. That's the first startup that I began. So it was an insurtech startup. In short, I was trying to, like, for simplicity of reasons, I would say we were building the policy bazaar for companies, right? For commercial insurance, right? That's what we were trying. Me and my team were trying to do, right? And while trying to solve this problem is when, I was meeting a lot of other entrepreneurs. I was meeting mentors. I was interviewing a lot of people for the startup, right? And I was trying to talk to a lot of business owners to kind of look at validating my problem, assumption of the problem that I had in terms of insurance and why businesses in India don't take up insurance and all that, right? So I was kind of probably crazily meeting like at least 2-3 meetings in a day that I was doing for like the first 6 months of me becoming an entrepreneur, right? And the problem of not having a drop-in workspace wherever I went was actually starting to grow in me, right? So I was actually dropping into for a meeting, I would kind of call somebody to a cafe coffee day, or I would call them to a Starbucks. Right, and we'll have a meeting there, right? And sometimes I've had the issue that I call somebody in for a meeting at Starbucks, but then we walk into the Starbucks and the place is already full, right? Or AC is not running in that place, and we barely can sit in that place because you're sweating profusely. And Chennai heat is something that you can't get away from, right? Or the fact that I was spending like tons of money, just like 1,000 rupees per meeting, just to buy a coffee. Neither did I like the coffee, nor the other person liked the coffee, but we just had to. You had to be the clown when you had to be in the circus, right? You had to wear that. You had to have a coffee mug, and that's how you were part of the, that's how you were like, you were not an alien in that place, right? And something that kind of didn't make sense to me, right? It didn't add up, right? Why am I spending so much money for a coffee that I did not want, right? And sometimes getting bad a look from the waiters if I don't order the coffee or you don't top up your coffee mug. They look at you like as though you were stealing something from them. Then I was starting to look at solutions. Hey, why are people on the go, are not able to find spaces to sit and work or sit and have a meeting on the go, right? So I started to talk to co-working places and say, hey, can you give me a space for a few hours, right? Can I come and use your space for a few hours? They said, no, you can take a space on a monthly rent, right? But I said, I'm not going to be in this location every day, right? I'm meeting somebody in North Chennai, I'm meeting somebody else in South Chennai some other day, right? I need something that I can tap into everywhere, right? But then I didn't have an option there. So I came up with a hack. I tied up with 3 cafes in Chennai, one in south of Chennai, one in center of Chennai, and one in north of Chennai. And I told them, hey, I'll come and drop into your place. I will not order your food. Don't force me to order your food. But I'll pay you a cover charge for the space that I use, right? Give me Wi-Fi, give me power. You don't even need to give me Wi-Fi. Just give me a neat table that's cleaned up. Give me a power socket to plug in my laptop and don't disturb me for food. That's all I ask. I'll pay you a cover charge to use the space, right? And after a few conversations, 3 cafes agreed to doing this, right? Because they saw the value. What is it going to do, right? Anyway, my space is empty. It's okay. Somebody comes and uses the space. And so in fact, one of the cafe owners said, like, I will do this, but the only thing that you have to promise me that you have to sit by the glass that's facing the road, so that somebody walking by sees that this cafe is a happening place, right? If you promise to sit by the glass, right, and work, keep your laptop on, work there, or have your meeting there, I'm happy to provide you the space, right? Because from the outside, I don't want people to kind of see people into my cafe and see this as an empty graveyard, right? So I said, okay, right, I'm happy to sit by the glass pane, right? Yeah. And that's how it started, right? It started as a personal hack, right? It is not a business, it's not a startup. I was just using this hack for my own meetings, and slowly when I was meeting other entrepreneurs, my friends who are entrepreneurs, I used to tell them that, hey, this is what I do, right? Like any person who has come up with a hack, you are proud to show it off to other people. So I was showing it off to other people, saying that, hey, this is the hack that I do, right? What do you guys do, right? See, I'm smart, I do this, right? And all these guys started to say, hey, this is awesome, right? We are also spending the same amount of money and wasting our time and going to a cafe coffee day or to a Starbucks, right? Why don't you let me in, right? I'm your friend. Let me in into this hack and let me also use this, right? And that was my first epiphany moment, as they say, right? I mean, it's not just you solve it for yourself, but then somebody else sees a value for that solution and somebody else wants to leverage that, right? That was my first epiphany moment to kind of they say the bulb went and then said, hey, could this be a business, right? Could this be a problem that I solve for others, right? Not just for myself, but for others, right? But I was toiling with that idea because I was already committed to my first startup. So I was toiling with this. I ran both of them in parallel for some time. Slowly, like 2 friends became 5 friends, 5 friends became 10 friends, 20 friends started to use what I was doing. Then I went to one of my mentors called Sukumar and told Sukumar, something happened, right? I'm kind of something interesting is happening with me. I want to share this with you, right? And he said, yeah, why don't we meet up, right? So I shared this with him and he said that, hey, this is, you might be onto something, but you don't know whether it is going to be a business or not, right? It could be an interesting idea that you're doing, right? You're looking at an office in a different way than commercial real estate has been, the way commercial real estate is on the offer, right? But you're not another Swiggy or you're not another Zomato, you're not another Ola or Uber, right? So you're providing a solution that doesn't exist today in the world. So validate this in the quickest possible way and cheapest possible way. In fact, he challenged me to don't spend a single rupee on this, but go see whether people like this idea, right? So so what I did, basically, this is on December 12th of 2017. I clearly remember the date. when I met him.
Okay.
So what I did was the very next day I went and I spent a little bit of money, though he asked me to spend zero money. I went and bought a fancy number from an idea store. I got a fancy number, set up a business WhatsApp business account on that number, and told my world of people saying that, hey, whoever needs a space, just message me on this WhatsApp number. I'll send you photographs. I'll send you the Google Maps link. And if you like it, I'll send you a payment link. Just pay for the space through an InstaMojo payment link and use the space, right? And that's an experiment that I ran for almost like 3 months. And roughly in February is when I decided that by the time we had around 100 bookings through the WhatsApp number that I had, right? So we had 100 bookings and I decided that now is the time that is to kind of make this the real thing, right? And kind of spend the energy and time on converting this into a business. That's how GoFrodo's kind of happened.
Nice. It has all originated from your own problem and you found your own community to start with. Wonderful. I want to know about your co-founders and especially get into the details of how are you managing GoFloaters with your co-founders being in a different country and you being in a very different place and your business is purely remote and it is targeting customers who are looking for remote. So it's a kind of falling, you have bucketed all kind of remote aspects in your business. So can you talk about that, please?
See, I mean, first and foremost, I think all of this is even happening only because all of us in the team at GoFloaters truly believe in remote working, right? So, and they, as they say, right, if you don't eat your own dog food, right? I mean, you can't like preach to others and do something else inside your house, right? So, we not only preach but we also follow remote working, and we are an example of our own, right? So, at one point in time before COVID. We were present in like our team members were spread across 6 cities, right? And 2 continents, right? My co-founder, like you said, he's from Dallas in Texas, right? I'm from Chennai and I had a developer from Jodhpur. I had a developer from Erode, software developer from Erode. I had a team member from Hyderabad, Bangalore. And I think we had somebody even from Sivakasi working from Sivakasi. So we were truly remote as a team, right? And we are still are, right? And to talk about my co-founder Srivatsan, he's somebody like I've known him for. Both of us actually entered Infosys on the same day, right? So we were part of the same batch of people who joined Infosys. Right. Though I was in Bangalore, he was in Chennai. But then very soon after my training in Bangalore, I relocated back to Chennai. And we both were in the same building at Infosys. So we worked together at projects together. So he's somebody who I've known him for almost 20 years. Right. So just the date, it was not a speed dating event through which I met him. Right. So I've known him for 20 years. We've played cricket together. Okay. We've gone to movies together. Right. We've done night outs together to deliver projects for our customers. So somebody who I've known for quite some time, right? We have common friends, we have common colleagues and so on and so forth, right? So we both coming together on GoFloaters happened accidentally, right? So he was also looking at some change from his corporate world. I was already into entrepreneurship and I was running my first startup. I was an insurtech startup at the point in time. And that's the time I was also deliberating on whether GoFloaters should become a company or not, right? And as serendipity would have to have it, Srivatsan, his last job was at TopTal, right? And he was working with global remote talent and he was taking... TopTal is, by the way, like TopTal is a marketplace for the top of the top freelancing talent in the world, right? And he was a client partner at TopTal, taking gig economy and remote work to Fortune 500 companies and convincing them why remote work is the way to go and how they should embrace the freelancing economy and so on and so forth, right? So it kind of happened. It is a natural fit. I was trying to kind of look at a fundamental problem that the freelancing economy was having with respect to not having access to productive professional workspaces, which is on demand. At the same time, he was looking at solving the problem of how do you match supply and demand of workforce for companies, right? And we just thought that it's probably a good time to kind of come together and solve this problem together.
Okay, that's nice. Can you share about how have you actually started with your pricing model for GoFloaters and how has it evolved over the period of time?
Right. So this is something that, so thankful to Sukumar again on this, right? Because we started with a very low-key product, right? Which is WhatsApp and a Google Sheet and that's it, right? So we were able to, in those 4 months, we were able to do a lot of iterations on the pricing, on the business model, on the value proposition that we were giving to people, and what kind of people do you want to actually even help, right? So we were able to do a lot of experiments, because there's no legacy, there's no technology that could not be changed overnight, right? So, so the algorithm is all here, right? It's a WhatsApp number. So algorithm of pricing and all that is in the head between me and my co-founder. So it was quite easy to kind of do the iterations. So so first and foremost, since we started off with providing cafes as a co-working space and an informal meeting space, we actually had to find out what were people willing to pay for just getting the space, right? Because the comparison was, hey, I can go to a cafe coffee day, order a coffee for 100 rupees and 120 rupees, or go to Starbucks, which is a little upscale, and pay 150 rupees for a frappuccino. But then I can sit there. If I take a cold coffee, I can probably sit there for 2 hours, right? I can, 1.5 hours to 2 hours, I can sit there and keep sipping very slowly, but still occupy the seat. So we had to find out what were people willing to pay for just the space and the ambience and the Wi-Fi and the power, where food was not a part of the equation, right? So we started at 60 rupees per hour. Then we dropped it down to 55 rupees per hour. Then we actually, eventually, we dropped it down to 25 rupees per hour, right? As the price point at which convincing, right, we could convince the majority of the people that this provided more value proposition to them than going to a Starbucks or a cafe coffee day and order for food, right? And initially, obviously, when we started off, we were not looking at making like tons of money, right? It was not a profit. The intention was to see if this idea can actually even survive. Can it become a business, right? Is there enough demand for something like this, right? So we were kind of trying to find, like they say, product market fit, right? I don't want to misuse that word, but that was the intention, right? To kind of find the product market fit, right? So we did a lot of experiments to kind of find the right medium, and finally we settled down on 35 rupees per hour as the price point where the space partners were happy, we were happy, and the customers were happy, right? So we kind of had to do a lot of experiments to come up with a price point at which it kind of started to make sense to everybody. But obviously along the way, we've had to course correct, and we have to do a lot of other changes as well. But those are the initial experiments that kind of taught us how do you run such experiments, and how do you kind of get the pulse and the feel of the customers. And again, since we were a marketplace, we had to keep both the supply and the demand happy, right? You can't win the game if one of them is happy and the other is pissed off with you, right? So we had to find the median where both of them were happy to play the game.
Okay, that's nice. Yeah, you have fluctuated a lot, as similar to the parking lot ticket fare, right?
Yeah. So, and we had one other example of a pricing experiment, right? We actually had a premium economy but we had three levels of cafes. So if you went to the top end cafe, then it'll be at some pricing. If you went to the average cafe, that will be with their pricing. There'll be an economy and there'll be a different pricing, right? So we had premium, business, and economy, or something like that, right? Like how airlines price it, right? So we even tried off with that model, right? Because hey, why should somebody pay more if they go to a little bit more of a down to earth cafe, right? Whereas somebody goes to a cafe which has been done really well and has a great ambience, they should probably pay more, right? So, but that didn't work, right? We found that didn't make sense to the people who are using that, right? So we had to standardize it. So we said across India, irrespective of what kind of a space it is, it's priced this way, right? And and we also had to figure out a logic to convince the space partners to do that, right? Because somebody would say, hey, I spent so much money on creating this ambience in my cafe. I'm in the heart of Bangalore and MG Road, Brigade Road. I pay so much for rent. You can't pitch me at the same level as somebody else who's in Malleshwaram, right? But so we had to kind of play all the permutation combinations and kind of convincing everybody to kind of standardize on the rates as well.
Okay, yeah, good amount of our research has gone there. Nice. So how has the customer adoption been so far? And I know post-COVID, it has people have started adopting to the remote working culture. But how has the trend in your start and now?
Yeah, so it's, in the initial year, it was a very slow pickup, I would say. Because again, like I said, for the first 4 months, we were ourselves experimenting and we ourselves were not sure of what we were doing. And actually finding out what's the actual value proposition that we can offer and who's it for, right? Then towards the end of the first year only, I would say, frankly, we kind of got a hang of who our customers really are, right? Who actually need co-floaters, right? And who are people who don't care less about whether we existed or not, right? So we found out that freelancers, independent professionals were the, and even within that, creative people were actually a lot more interested with our offering, right? Anecdotally, mm-hmm. let me take some examples. Right? There's actually, we've had like people come and write, sit and write poems in our cafes, right? We've had a Tamil movie script writer use our cafes. He was one of our power mm-hmm. users. So a lot of creative people found that our offering was very interesting to them, right? Because okay. they could get a unique ambience, right? It is not a cookie cutter, white walls, like a traditional office, right? Because they didn't fit themselves into a traditional office. So they wanted the ambience. They wanted to see other people. They wanted to be socialized with other people so that they could observe and get inspired by all these characters who enter the cafe, right? So so we found that creative people were quite took on to our offering. At the same time, we also found a lot of independent professionals took on to our offering because independent professionals, again, did not have an office on their own. So they would travel, they would meet other people across Chennai, across the cities. And so they needed, like me, right? I was an independent professional, or I was like more of a one-man army trying to, in my first startup, I was doing that, right? So a lot of those one-man okay. armies, lone warriors, needed, kind of took on to co-founders really well. A lot of small startups, right? One to co-founder, founder, or co-founder, founder, and one developer kind of startups, again, took on to our model of way of working, right? So a lot of these people happen. A lot of very interesting use cases also came across, which kind of opened our vision on what GoFloaters could eventually be, right? We are no way there yet. But for example, right, one of the freelancers actually, her name is Janani. So she was a business professional, and she was working for a company that would translate scientific journals from Japanese to English and English to Japanese, right? So this is what she used to do before her daughter was born, right? And since mm-hmm. her daughter was born, and since she was away from her family and all that, she actually had to quit her job, and she stopped working, right? And then Janani's daughter was now going to school, right? And one day she dropped her daughter in school and went to one of the cafes where we had a small 10 card, and she read that she could book the space for 25 rupees per hour. And that's when she realized okay. that, hey, I could put my daughter in school, come to this cafe, open my laptop and work for 2-3 hours when my daughter is at school, right? And then close the laptop, go pick her back and go back home, right? So rather than shuttling back and forth, she started doing this, right? And this was like kind of liberating eye-opener event for us, right? In the sense that it is not really addressing existing freelancers, but a lot of people who today think
new ideas,
right? Yeah. They can't work because they had home commitments and they had family commitments, right? They could figure out a way to work because there is always pockets of time where they can step out and work, right? Rather than kind of devoting it. But Janani cannot do a 9-to-5 shift, right? She can't work, right? Yeah. Right? But she can certainly do 2 hours, 3 hours spread across the day, right? So that was one very eye-opening interaction with the customer that we had. Another very eye-opening interaction with the customer was like one of the doctors. She was actually a acupuncture specialist, right? And she used to work in Dr. Ramachandra Hospital in Porur. One area of Chennai, right? For non-Chennai listeners out there, right? And the moment she got to know about GoFloaters, what she does, like, hey, rather than making my patients come from one part of the city to Porur, let me go to them, right? So she booked our conference room that we had in Alvarpet, again, one of the central districts of Chennai. And she said, hey, Saturday, I'm going to be here. From 3 to 6, I'm going to be here. So my patients, and her patients were predominantly elderly people, right? Who had issues and who were getting addressing those challenges through acupuncture, right? She said, hey, I'm here. I have an on-demand clinic. I'm going to be sitting here in this conference room between 3 to 6 p.m. You come and meet me there, right? So she was able to move. She was able to move her clinic from one part of the city to another part of the city, right? And get access to this clinic on an on-demand basis, right? And she was a young professional. So when I was talking to her, she told me, "Hey, I can't afford to set up my own clinic, right? I'm too young in the professional career of mine. I can't afford to spend and have my own clinic, I need to gain experience by working at the hospital, right? But that doesn't stop me from serving my patients through co-floaters, right? I can set up a clinic and I can meet my patients there, right? So it was kind of a, again, another epiphany moment for me, right? In the sense that space is such an integral part of, at one end of the spectrum, it is a liberating. You have space, you can imagine things with it. At the same time, not having a space is so constraining, right? People cannot imagine going to a 9-to-5 job. People can't imagine I can't travel. I have my young kid at home, or have an elderly person to take care at home. I can't travel. I can't be away for 8-9 hours at a stretch, right? So all these, the regular office and the regular way of thinking about work is so constraining, right? For many people, right? That sometimes we don't realize that, right? And being a part of co-floaters and working with all these customers kind of made me realize that this remote, giving space on demand is so much more liberating for people, right? It's not just about a space to go and work. It's about reimagining their own professional careers in ways that they've never been able to do before.
Definitely reimagining the way that people are using. The space constraint is there for every business, but for people who are starting new, it's a big thing that you are solving.
Right.
Very nice. Yeah. What's the tech ecosystem involved in your company and for both the products and the services that you are offering?
So tech is a huge part of what we do, right? Like you talked about us as an Airbnb, right? So we in similar to that, Airbnb tech is a huge part of the whole ecosystem, right? Tech is the entry point of the experience, but then going to the actual physical space is the actual experience, right? The moment of truth, right? So for us, tech is a huge part of it because again, like how you cannot imagine an Uber without technology. You can't imagine an Uber without technology, right? You can't imagine calling somebody and say, hey, is a cab near me, right? You need an app to kind of find out a cab and book the app. Similarly, since we also work on helping people providing drop-in, on-demand workspaces. Hey, you can book a space and be there in 20 minutes, right? You can start using the space in 20 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. That's the promise that we give them, right? And for that whole thing to happen, there has to be a smooth process that's like held by technology, enabled by technology, right? So we have, for example, we have a customer app that people can download from the Google Play Store or App Store, right? And for people who are not comfortable installing an app, we also have a web version through which they can discover, search, filter, and book a GoFloater space. On the same side, we have a partner app where space partners kind of maintain real-time inventory of the space, right? Tell about the availability of the space to us and to our customers, right? Confirm the bookings, right? Collect, and the technology helps us collect the payment, collect feedback, right? And do the whole closed loop of the whole engagement with the customer, right? So technology is a huge part of what we do. Since we are primarily the on-demand office space, technology is and will remain an integral part of what we offer, because without that we can't imagine something that you can book for the next moment and be there.
Of course, you should be having a very big team handling all this tech ecosystem behind providers of the space and also the technology. So how big is your team on the ground
today? And you will be surprised, and even I would be surprised that we are a 5-member team, right?
Very, very small for
including me and my co-founder. So it's like so hands on deck, there are like 5 people. But obviously, since we believe in remote working and we believe in gig economy in the large sense, I would say that we are a 5 employee company. But then at any point in time, we have like 4 to 5 freelancers helping us out, right? Obviously not on a full time basis, right? So we have a designer who's on who's a freelancer. We have an SEO person who's a freelancer. We have a digital marketing person who's a freelancer. So we work with a lot of freelancers, right? And because we not only does it help us save a lot of money, at the same time it also gives us the flexibility to work with the best of the talent without having to employ them and kind of make them part of your team, right? So we work with a lot of freelancing talent from across India again. So today I would say like we are a 9-member team, of which like 5 are employees plus 4 freelancers, right? So that's and 2 interns, right? So that's basically the team we have today. Before COVID, we were roughly around 14 people, but we had to downsize because COVID during the 9 months or during the year, it was actually not possible for us to sustain at that level, right? So we had to give some furlough to people, and some of the people decided to do other things with life because of COVID. So we had to bid them farewell. But today we are kind of picking momentum again. And the fact that we had already invested our time in building the technology before COVID happened, and the fact that we were super focused on doing what we do, we are able to manage whatever we are doing with a very small team. So
Is. Yeah, for a business which is running across 21 cities, right, as you mentioned, and a 5+4 member team is not a big team. It must be challenging to actually run the entire show.
The truth is, COVID has also taught us to be extremely frugal with our spends, right? And again, I'll elaborate more when we talk about. At a later point in time in the podcast, but basically. Every rupee matters, so you kind of see what is the right investment. So you kind of try to make the maximum out of what you have in hand in terms of both people resources and money as a resource.
You established the tech way before the COVID. There should always be a grip on the overall tech ecosystem when it comes to the end-to-end architecture. So you are a kind of both a business person and the architect for the whole product, or is it a mix of you and your co-founder?
I would say of the two of us, so Srivatsan also comes from a tech background, right? He's been a developer, he's been everybody, right? But the realization that we both have is I know that he's good at operations and he's good at sales and he's good at finance. He knows that I'm good at tech and I'm good at marketing and I'm good at customer engagement and customer experience and things like that, right? So we clearly know that, you're good at that, so you're better managing that. I'm good at this, I'm better managing this. Right? So we have a very complementary kind of a role, right? While both of us can do each other's work, right? In case he's down one day, I can obviously augment whatever he's doing, and vice versa can happen, right? So he equally interfaces the developers and gives them ideas on how to do things, right? But at any point in time, we know who's a driver on the wheel for a particular aspect of business, right? So I'm on the driving wheel when it comes to technology, architecture, and implementing all of that. And I'm from a tech background, whereas he had moved into the operations and sales and that kind of a background in his corporate career, right? So that's how we kind of smoothly manage the there are a few things that fall in between these two, and it'll be funny to say, but sometimes we toss the coin and say, hey, who picks this up? Okay. Heads, you pick it up, tails I pick it up.
Got it. Any challenging such instances that happened where decision making was so crucial, but you faced challenges in moving further, be it operations or R&D or the product that you are dealing with?
See, for example, COVID. The first year was a struggle, like I said, right? Because we ourselves did not know who are we building this for? What is the real value proposition? Is this even a business? Is this even worth the time investment that we were doing and all that, right? So the first year was a struggle. The second year was we were able to see the fruits of our investments coming through, and we were able to expand into other cities. Right in the second year, and the second year, and after that, a lot of media started to notice us. So a lot of people started to spread the word. Referral marketing happened quite extensively. In fact, I would say even today, I can confidently say 50% of our users are referred by somebody else. Right. So word of mouth is still a huge part of our inbound leads that we get, or inbound customers that we get. Right. Just when we got a good handle of things and we knew how to take the business forward is when COVID happened as well, right? Or before that, the WeWork debacle happened. When WeWork debacle happened, the entire co-working industry was looked at in a bad light, and people started to doubt co-working as a mainstay. They said it's a fad, it's going to go away, right? It's burning through cash and all that. One incident that hit us little bit was the WeWork debacle. Then when we were coming out of that and we were trying to kind of raise the head again, then COVID again happened, right? I would say that shook up COVID shook up things for many businesses, right? And we are no exception to that, right? So now what we've what it has done, COVID has really done, is like the 9 months we were actually like any entrepreneur out there, any founder out there, we couldn't anticipate or we couldn't predict when this is going to get over, right? Because the government would say 10 days lockdown, 15 days lockdown, then a partial lockdown, a full lockdown. Then so you are constantly recalibrating your business plans for that, right? What is my projection, right? So every month the projection would change because we can't open today, right? You had to open 1 month later, right? We can't start operations today. You had to postpone it. Or Bangalore would be down, Chennai would be up. Then Chennai would be locked down again. Suddenly, like, yeah. Mumbai would go on a lockdown. So we couldn't calibrate ourselves. So we were constantly recalibrating, I would say, for that 7 months of lockdown, right? But then right around August is when all of us, in fact, not just me and my co-founder, I would, again, the other fact that I would pride in for what we have created is a team that's like a super contributive to ideas. And so we're a small team, so collective decisions don't take. We believe in taking collective decisions and getting everybody to align to that. So in August and September is when we opened up the whole discussion again and say, hey, who do we want to be after COVID, right? Do we want to be be a B2C player and offer spaces to freelancers and all that? Or do we focus on companies? And companies are now thinking about remote, right? When we started off, companies were not thinking about remote and work from anywhere. But now with COVID, every company, whether it is Infosys or TCS or Cognizant or the startups or established startups like InstaMojo, everybody is looking at remote and work from anywhere as the way to forward, right? So which should we focus on, right? Obviously, both were interesting. Both were viable business models, right? To focus on B2C or B2B. But then we decided that B2B is what we're gonna focus on post-COVID, right? And I think we took a right decision in August, and we've seen that play out really well for us in 2021, right? But it was a very hard decision to take because the last 2.5 years, freelancers and creative professionals and all these people is what made GoFruitus what it was, right? So kind of deciding that we will be more of a B2B player was a little bit of a tough decision to make, right? A tough pivot to make and all that, but I think we're happy. But the other big thing that that we are happy that we are able to do it with this pivot is that now GoFruitus is equally about serving people in suburbs of tier one cities and tier two cities and tier three cities as we are in tier one cities of India, right? Because employees of companies have gone to their native places, right? They've gone to their hometowns, they've gone to different parts of the world, I mean different parts of India for sure. Yeah. So we are now serving employees of companies in Trichy, Salem, in Indore, in Ahmedabad, in Calcutta, in Vishakhapatnam, Vizag, Mysore, Trivandrum, right, Kanyakumari, you name it, right? So now we are all about helping team members stay where they are, right?
across
wherever they are, right? So it's a newfound freedom that employees of companies are having today that they've never had it, right? And being a part of that interesting ecosystem of providing the freedom is something that's super thrilling for us to be doing right now.
True, you opted a different way of scaling from tier one to the other tier two and tier three cities.
No, there's no solution there, right? There's no tier one, tier two, tier three. There's no solution for a workspace is a problem that's yet to be solved, right? Because previously, like I mean, you got an IT job, you had to be in Bangalore, right? You had a startup job, you had to be in Hyderabad, or you had to be in Delhi, or you had to be in Bangalore, right? So talent kind of migrated like into these tier one cities, right? But now they don't have to do that, right? They can be wherever they are and continue to work for the world's best companies from Kanyakumari, right? So you don't have to be in Chennai or Bangalore.
Yeah, true. That's a very good point. Yeah. So coming to the information on funding, how did you manage? Because now you managed to build it and you managed to actually scale out in the other countries. Other cities also. So how was the initial fundings were managed? Is it bootstrapped or do you try to bring in any external funding?
Yeah. So we were predominantly bootstrapped till the first 2 years of GoFruitus. So it was me and my co-founder funding the company, right? And right around that time, when we also kind of figured out what GoFooders is and what we should be doing with it, is when we kind of started to share this with some of our friends, and a couple of our friends kind of contributed as friends and family funding round, right? So we opened up that round in 2019, and we had a couple of our friends contribute to the kitty of GoFooders, right? And that's what helped us come till 2020, right? So and again, we've been very frugal even before. We've been very frugal with our spends, but with COVID, we've been even more frugal. So we still are primarily running on revenue generated by the business at one end, and at the same time, the friends and family money that we've had. We have not done a formal series of equity funding yet, right? We predominantly, I would say, like friends, family, and colleagues, we have taken money from more people who know us personally and who trust us more than our business acumen or our technology acumen, right? So that's how we've been predominantly been running. And obviously, since we were revenue generating from day two of December 12, 2017, the idea was there. December 14th, we were already making revenues, right? So the revenue was always there. So that was able to fund a lot of our efforts, right? So that's how we are still running.
So how long it actually took for you to actually start seeing the revenue coming in a comfortable way?
In a comfortable way, I think I would say like it took us like 8 months to kind of get to a revenue where you could mm-hmm. offset some expenses with that revenue, right?
Okay, nice. Right?
Because like it was like I said, right, the first 1 year was a very slow paced journey for us, right? So if we were not a viral thing, like suddenly like everybody's talking about COVID, it didn't happen, and so it was a slow curve, I would say. Right around 8 months into the operations, the revenues were comfortable enough for us to offset some people's salary or some people in the marketing efforts and so on and so forth, right?
Okay.
Right around COVID is when we actually were hitting break even at that point in time, right? Which means that we didn't need external funding to survive, right? So I would say right around October of 2019 is when where we were very close to break even. And we did break even around February of 2020, or if January of 2020, we actually hit break even, right? And February 2020, we were actually looking at making, starting to make profits with GoFooders, right? But then COVID happened, like I said, right? So, and then which meant that the whole thing had to be rethought through. Now we are again in the, but again, Jan 2021 has been super game changing for us again. 2020 was by and large a washout year for us, as it has been to many companies. Mm-hmm. So 2021, mm-hmm. Jan 2021 onwards, we've onboarded like hundreds of companies who are now looking
okay.
at this way of working going forward.
Okay. You started in a nice frugal way, and you managed to pull it through. So what formula of sales and marketing has actually worked for you, because you started with bootstrapping and it's all your money? So how have you limited that you are not overspending, but also reaching out to the customers that you want to get it?
Yeah. So like I said before, Ashok, our biggest marketing success story, if you want to call it, is the word of mouth marketing. Right. So till date, I would say like 50% of our customers, both B2C and B2B, our referral sources, right? So so these are people referred by other people who have used and obviously liked the service and liked the product and hence are referring, right? So our growth predominantly happened, a lot of that growth happened via the referral marketing channel. But obviously when we launched newer cities, we had to do a little bit of performance marketing, because like, for example, we were known in Chennai, but nobody knew us in Bangalore when we wanted to get into Bangalore, right? I mean, there's no referral that could happen when people don't know you. So whenever we were launching, we did a little bit of paid marketing in those cities, right? But today, both for...
Is it kind of a digital like ad agency or FB ads, Google ads kind of thing, or right. what way?
I would say from the organic, what has helped us is SEO, right? And Quora, okay. answering questions, relevant questions on Quora helped us organically generate traffic to the website and mm-hmm. for strangers to understand what GoFooders is, yeah. right? So organically, a lot of effort that we had put in earlier on into SEO and into Quora helped us, right? And yes, I would say like Google Ads helped us more so than FB Ads. As in, I would say like they were more, the conversion was better off for Google Ads than FB Ads, right? So we've tried all kinds of ad marketing, right? We've done Twitter ads, we've done FB ads, we've done Quora ads. But by and large, Google Ads have helped us more so than FB ads. Oh. Today we do very little of marketing, I would say, like outbound, or we don't do performance marketing. We do more of outbound sales because now we are into B2B spectrum. So we do more of outbound outreach and sales than we do marketing. But we do a little bit of inbound marketing through content and through through SEO and all that, right? But very little of paid marketing we do. The budget is very small. Again, being very frugal with that.
The initial word of mouth also plays a big role. Yeah, good. So you have already customers reach across more than 20 cities in India. So what are your further plans in terms of scaling your business?
I wouldn't confidently say that we are scaling in these 21 cities, right? 21 cities we've just onboarded now, right? So it is always a struggle. Mm-hmm. It's always a scale challenge when you launch a new city, right? Because like people in that city don't know you, right? So you need to kind of start the whole process. Like you need to kind of establish your foot there. You need to, since we are a marketplace, we need to get the supply in those cities before you can look for demand in those cities. So it's definitely been, so every city we add, you kind of figure out, you kind of fine tune your playbook for launching a new city and apply it for that city and kind of try to see what to work it out, right? So certainly like that scaling and adding, and the only way we can scale today, and like I said, right, COVID has really given us an opportunity to kind of help people not only in tier one cities, but also in tier two and tier three cities. So which means that our scope of expansion has kind of gone 100x, right? Previously, expansion would mean like from Chennai, I would go to Mumbai. From Mumbai, I'll go to an NCR, or from there, I'll go to like the tier one cities, right? The metro cities and tier one cities. But now, today we have demand coming from Imphal and from Kanyakumari and from Trivandrum and Thrissur and Hubli and Dharwad, right? So you kind of the whole world is your oyster, right? But now the whole of India is our marketplace, right? But then it's good in that sense that the scope of the business is gone 100x now, right, with the B2B pivot, right? But at the same time, it is also a marketing challenge, right? But how do you make people know about you in those cities? Right. How do you make
I guess now you have a different challenge of how do you meet your demand now the demand is more because of the situation we are in, right, post COVID.
Yeah, exactly, right. And nice. And we continue to kind of struggle with the challenge that people have, right? And which is a fair challenge because people are not, companies and heads of companies are not still sure whether they should have their employees work from home or they should give some option whether it's safe for people to come out. While they have challenges with work from home, right? All of them have mental health challenges. They have overworking challenges with their companies. They have attrition challenges. They have employees retention being a challenge, right? Employee teams being able to collaborate is becoming a big challenge for companies, right? So work from home, you're forced to do that, right? No company would love to do it, right? As that's the only way to. Only bet they would do, right? They want to have some solution to that, right? But then companies do have to keep employees' health and wellness on top of everything, right? So and this new COVID surge of cases is again making people think about it again, right? So it's a process, right? So at one point you have vaccination happening, on the other side you have newer cases coming up and all that. So leaders do need to weigh in all their options and take the decision that works with their company. But then a lot of companies are taking this call now to kind of provide, because they are now the biggest fear that they have is like this COVID pandemic has led to another mental health pandemic within their employee base, right? And they are seeing that culture is eroding, because when you onboard a new team member, that team member is remote and they don't know what your company is all about, right? They don't know how your company operates, right?
Yeah.
when you onboard a remote team member, right? So culture is getting eroded at many companies. Collaboration, specifically companies that they kind of are, the foundation is collaboration. For example, a product company, a tech product company, or a creative company like a marketing agency, right? So their foundation is collaboration of team members, right? People coming together and delivering a product or delivering a creative campaign or delivering it's a collaborative effort, right? They're not individual players, right? So these companies are the ones that are struggling a lot, and these companies are the ones that are actually embracing the Coforto's way of working, because they do see that work from home is like, the more they kind of settle in doing that, they go down a slippery slope.
Yeah, true. Nice. Wonderful. Now moving on to the next segment of this episode, rapid fire questions. Let me just bring it down.
Yeah.
So what's the best thing that happened to you this month?
The best thing that happened to me this month, I would say, is like one vaccination started, right? So that is a huge relief to everybody, right? I mean, every Indian out there.
True.
Right? So it's a huge relief that there is a solution that's there out there, right? So that's number one.
Yeah.
Number two, I would say, like, while the cases have been a dampener, the increase in cases in Kerala, Karnataka, and Maharashtra have been a dampener, but people are realizing that, or companies are realizing that it's been a year, right? So it's almost becoming the anniversary of lockdown, right? It's going to be like in a few days from now, right? Companies are taking a decision now, right? So they know that they can't continue with this forever, right? So we've seen that a lot of companies that were in a limbo of, hey, should we extend work from home for more? What should we do? Should we bring people back to office? So decisions are being made now, right? Now that the anniversary of the lockdown is here, and people have realized that they have to make a stance and they have to move in a particular direction. So decisions are being made, right? Albeit cautiously, but decisions are being made, right? Because from August till January of 2020, it was like almost like a limbo, right? People did not know.
Yeah.
People did not want to decide, right? They didn't. The early adopters of early movers have started to make a decision. Now the curve is picking up for the people who are in the middle of the spectrum are making decisions.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing.
The more of acceptance is coming up.
Yeah.
Nice. So, which is your favorite subject in school?
I would say physics was my favorite subject, and it still remains to be, I would say, right?
Nice. So what's the book that you have read very recently, book or article, and which one you liked it?
See, I'm a more of a podcast listener. Sorry, I would say an Audible listener than reading. I don't read books. Reading, I equate reading to falling asleep while having the book in hand. So I'm more of I listen to audiobooks more often now than ever before. So so the one that I'm listening to is like the Hard Thing About Hard Things is the book that I'm listening to right now. So it talks about being in the trenches as a founder and really doing the hard things, cracking the hard things from all sorts of things, right? And COVID has been a hard thing to crack. So I'm looking at reading that book with quite a bit of interesting things. I think I would say like the books that have changed my approach to entrepreneurship, I would say are The Purple Cow and 0 to 1, right? Has been, I would say, the biggest influencers of my way of thinking and way of approaching problem solving and being an entrepreneur. I would say those two books have had the biggest impact. And I listen to a lot of podcasts, so I don't only draw to books. So I listen to a lot of podcasts on remote working and on marketing, on entrepreneurship.
So you're also an audio person.
Yeah, I think I've become more of an audio person. See, as an entrepreneur, I was like, a lot of my time was in traveling. I told you, right? And that's how even GoFundMe happened, because I was traveling and I was riding my bike across, right? So those, like an hour of traffic, listen to a podcast while driving.
Excellent, yeah. Yeah, true. That's how even actually anyone who is traveling more, I guess they will all eventually end up being more of a podcast person. And that's how I've also being in Bangalore traffic. Yeah, I became more of an audio person.
Yeah, so that's the nice. That's what traffic does to you.
Yeah, a positive side of traffic.
And when you are driving, you can't obviously fall asleep, so you have to keep yourself awake with something interesting to do. So.
True. Nice. When do you hit bed and what time you wake up and how does your first few hours of your morning look like?
So this has been a little bit of, I wouldn't say, I'm a more of a night person. So my best hours are after 12 o'clock in the night. So okay. 12 to 3 is my most productive time, right? So I get up late. So I'm a lazy guy. The moment I go to bed, not the easiest of person to be woken up. So I wake up like at 8 o'clock, 8:30 a.m. So I've been more of a late night person I get up late. But things have changed a little bit now with my son. So I have to put him to bed early. And so things have changed a little bit. So I get up a little early nowadays, go to bed early. So 11:30, 12, I'm in the bed and get up around 7 and start working. So the early hours of the day is like is my to-do list time. I go through my list of to-dos and reprioritize a little bit, right? So I mean this is a habit that I'm trying to form. So I wouldn't say I've been practicing it for quite some time. It's a habit that I'm trying to form to kind of get up and prioritize your day for the day and start my work that way. And the first things that I do after I do that is to look at the website traffic the previous day, right? How many bookings happened the previous day and all that. So you kind of draw your energy from a positive, hey, yesterday we got 10% more traffic to the website, or we had like more bookings this year. So I look at some of the numbers that kind of give you some motivation, right? That's how
we can say. Okay, nice. So how is your formula for keeping in connect with your mentor, and how do you make sure that your mentors are available to you when you need them most?
Yeah, I think, first and foremost is like, so I would say GoFlows wouldn't even have happened if I had not spoken to my mentor, Sukumar, right? So I owe him big time for me being here where I am, right? Apart from that, a big salute to one of the other mentors called Ramesh Kumar, who's been who's kind of given a sane sense of thinking when things were not going right. Right. So you need somebody to kind of keep you straight and keep you honest and keep you motivated when things are not going the way they are going for you. Right. So first and foremost, the biggest way you can pay back your mentors is to kind of respect their time and respect their advice and keep them posted, right? Because keep them posted on why, whether see, and all the mentors. Again, there are mentors who I'm talking about my mentors, right? Let me not generalize this, but hey, you told me this, I've done this. This is what the outcome of that is. There because remuneration, right? They. That's you even took their thoughts seriously, right? And even if you said I'm not doing this because of this reason, right? Is that something that I expect? So kind of valuing their time, showing respect to their inputs and their guidance, right? And being truthful, right? You like going to a mentor and talking to them is like going to a doctor and talking about your health issues, right? You have to be open with them and go threadbare and expose yourself, right? So getting comfortable to expose yourself and somebody in front of somebody it takes time, right? And you can't do this with every mentor, right? So I would say that choosing a mentor is as complicated or as important as choosing your co-founder or your team members, right? You have to choose the person who you can actually expose yourself to, right? And you're comfortable doing that, right? And you can't do this with everybody. You can't do this with everybody who comes and claims that they can mentor you, right? It's been that, right? So that's how things have been, right? And I think just being respectful to them, respectful to their time, and going back and updating them what has happened with you, what's happened to the input that they gave you, and whether it's working, not working, and just surrender, right? Hey, I'm stuck here. Bail me out, right? Just surrender to your mentor and tell them that you're stuck here, and not be egoistic about, you know, I know how to get out of this, right? So sometimes you have to kind of go, hey, I don't know how to come out of this problem. Help me, right? is the biggest service that you can do to yourself and to your mentor.
Yeah, nice, wonderful. So for people who wanted to start off something own, having big ideas but afraid to begin with, what is one suggestion that you would like to give?
I would say, like, after COVID, right, my biggest savior so far, right, when things have gone wrong or things have not gone the way that you want, right? And entrepreneurship, like, I mean, it's nobody is going to claim that entrepreneurship or running a startup is going to be a bed of roses, right? Nobody's going to claim you that, right? And if you jump into entrepreneurship thinking that it's going to be a bed of roses, then you are probably the biggest fool out there, right? So know that you're going to jump into a hotbed, and entrepreneurship has been compared to many things, right? Jumping out of a cliff or jumping into an ocean without knowing swimming. So it's been compared to many things, and all of that is true, right? And you need to know that before jumping in, right? But then once you've jumped in, I think the only question that has saved me from going mad or being very dejected or disappointed is, like, is the only question that I ask myself is, like, what is the worst that can happen, right? That asking myself that question, hey, COVID has happened, what is the worst that can happen, right? Now that you're in lockdown, what is the worst that can happen, right? You're not going to die.
True.
Right? You can always come back, right? So I need to put this on hold for 3 months. Fine. I mean, you're not going to die for sure, right? So the moment you ask the question, what's the worst that can happen, right? You're not making profits. You're burning money, right? So the moment you ask the question, what's the worst I'm willing to accept, right? And you kind of say, this is the worst that I can accept, right? I can't accept anything below this, right? You know the boundaries that you have, right? And you will live with those boundaries. And being frugal is another thing that I would say, right? Because if we were not frugal, many of our competitors died through COVID. Right? They don't exist today, right? It's not easy, right? It's not. So if you are like, and suddenly you can't, like, if you are not frugal, right? If you're spending X lakhs a month, you can't suddenly bring that down to X by 100, right? Momentum will
step by step.
It's like a train, right? You the fast train, you can't stop it suddenly, right? Stopping it suddenly means you're derailing it, right? It's death, right? Sudden death, right? So being very frugal from the very beginning is actually a good thing, right? Because not only to prepare for the worst, right, but it helps you grow the business the right way, because you can put tons of money and acquire customers, right? You can put an ad or you can run a promo and spend money and acquire customers, but these customers are not going to be there if you stop the promo, right? So being frugal and growing the business frugally is another advice I would give people. And third thing I would say, like, start validating the idea, start validating the problem statement as early as possible, because like I said, right, I'm in GoFloaters WhatsApp number. We ran this for 4 months. So it was very slow to begin with, right? We didn't jump on the idea. I think that's probably the best thing that we did, right? Rather than jumping on the idea and kind of validating is how we have been able to kind of constantly tweak the model and make it work.
Okay, wonderful. Nice. And the last question of this episode, for people who don't know about you and your company, where should they look and how do they find you?
Very simple. So the name of the company is GoFloaters. The spelling is GoFloaters. And the story behind the name, very simply, is like, floaters are people who don't believe in going to one office and being locked down in one location. So we said GoFloaters, right? So it is a brand that would kind of be the voice for people who didn't believe in fixating themselves in one place and say, this is my place of work. So look out for GoFloaters on Google or your favorite search engine. If you search for us, you will definitely be there. And what we do, like I said, we help people be, we are the office for distributed teams. So if you're a distributed team, you're a remote team, then I think it would be worthwhile for you to check us out and see how we can help you. Our apps are there in the Google Play Store and Apple App Store. So again, GoFloaters, search for it. You can't miss it on the Google Play Store and Apple App Store. I think we're fairly active on Twitter and LinkedIn, not so much on Insta or Facebook. So you can also get us, again, by the GoFloaters handle on both both on LinkedIn and on Twitter.
Yeah, and I should say GoFloaters logo is very, very cool and catchy.
Yeah, thank you.
Great, great. Wonderful talking to you, and it's a pleasure having you and getting all your insights, Shyam. Thank you for coming on. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Ashok, for having me. I know you have a famed list of speakers that you've had before me. So I'm humbled by the opportunity to be on your podcast. And I hope I live up to that expectations and live up to the pedigree of other people that you've interviewed before. And thanks for doing this, because stories, every startup, the story is worth to be told, whether the startup is super successful startup or not so successful startup, but the story is worth to be told, because there are a lot of models and a lot of learnings to be learned from every startup story that's out there. And thanks for capturing it and giving it to people to learn from, because unlike many other things, you can't document entrepreneurship and startup in a book, right? Because as time changes, the experience changes. And so the only way is to capture stories of people and put it out there and for other people who come down the line to kind of get inspired and learn from that. So thanks for doing that super important service for the entrepreneurial ecosystem of India. So thanks for doing that.
Thank you for all encouraging words, Shyam. It matters a lot. Thank you so much. Okay, we are at the end of episode number 31. Thank you very much, Shyam, for coming on and sharing your experiences. And to our listeners, you can find out the episode summary in the description. Until we catch up soon with more exciting stories, stay tuned, be motivated. Thank you.